This will, I'll try to make it as technical as possible, so apologies if it sounds like too deep of a dive, but I want everybody, so like you have, I have 20 minutes, so in 20 minutes you'll learn what plasma cache is, how it works, where it doesn't, and why it's the most like viable like solution currently, at least at the current research levels, because the, all the other solutions, I'm of the personal opinion that they're quite, let's say, optimistic and ambitious, and it will take some time until we have them like in production. So, there's my slides. Yeah. So, who knows here how plasma cache works? Like, has tried implementing it in a low level, essentially. Oh shit. Okay. Okay. So, the point is that the other plasma constructions, the original plasma paper, it was very, very important because it gave the notion of what plasma is. It should be like the Satoshi's vision thing, Vitalik's vision, whatever you want to call it. However, it was like totally unrealistic. It has this whole MapReduce construction. It had like a bunch of like the dream of the tree of chains and now everything communicating with each other, like the Supreme Court. I'm not of the opinion that it works. So this talk will be highly opinionated on what I'm thinking, how plasma is and works. So take this with a grain of salt. This is not expressing the general, let's say, opinions of the plasma community, I guess. So, yeah. test, 1, 2. Yeah. And the point is, okay, anyway. The thing is that the plasma, it works like with the classic sidechain construction. You have like a main chain, the sidechain, you deposit your funds, you do whatever you like on the sidechain, you can take them out. But the thing is that in order to get scalability, we actually need a consensus mechanism that advances faster than the normal mechanism, than the base chain mechanism, and you cannot do that, like, in my opinion, by definition, you need to like make some compromise on either decentralization or the security aspect. And so what we're doing is that with Plasma, you construct essentially a non-custodial sidechain, because at any given point in time, if there's some invalid state transition, you can go through this exit game, and you can like just get your money out within a certain challenge period. Yeah, maybe, how do you handle this? I'm not exactly sure, like, yeah. I have like a bunch of nice like shapes and all that to explain it. So like the whole difference between like plasma cache and like the other variants, it's because the plasma cache, it's non-fungible. It is in the family, let's say, of plasma protocols that it's, the security is enforced by the non-fungibility of root chain deposits. So each coin you deposit it has a unique ID, it's different from each other. And you can use it to have a sort of like a simple exit game where like each coin is unique. You don't have to use the whole priority queue construction to go through your, what do you call it, to make multiple exits. There's no need for the mass exits construction, which is like very important because currently all the other plasma, non-plasma cache variants designs, they require mass exits. And I will make the claim that mass exits currently aren't viable due to how like, let's say, primitive, like our signature aggregation works on the, we cannot verify enough. Even if you do a multi-signature and you compress it and you do a threshold signature on all of them, you cannot actually like verify the whole thing on the EVM. Yeah, and like, okay. So Jeff just said, like, explain why Starks are better than XT-based checkpoints and whatever, or RSA accumulators. So first of all, quantum resistance. Okay, so the argument is, plasma cache has a very big, let's say, disadvantage that whenever you're passing coins around and as the sidechain progresses, the coin history grows linearly. So I have 10 blocks, I need to pass around 10 blocks worth of proofs, and this sucks. So what we can do is, one, we can just pass around the proofs. Two, we can do checkpoints, but which is a very brilliant construction by Kelvin. However, this thing, it requires so much social coordination, it's like on the level of the mass exits, and I'm not sure if it works. So on the contrary, what you can do is that you can use the RSA accumulator, the RSA accumulator's recent construction, which you like assign a unique prime number to each leaf and you make some black magic on it, and you can somehow prove compactly that the coin's history is valid. And the final, the very sexy alternative, is that you can just take the whole history, you make a Stark proof, you put it on a black box without any trusted setup or anything that you don't like, and just have a compact proof that can be transmitted to your receiver. And actually, in these cases, we never need an on-chain verifier to do that because I want to prove, like, let's say to Jeff, I just want to tell him that, you know, I have this coin, take it, and he proves it on his own. And the verification is really very fast. And yeah, quantum resistance, because we need to be like anticipating the quantum computers. They're coming to get us. Well, where's my slides?
Yeah. Q&A, exactly. Questions, please.
So actually, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can answer like any question. Technical question, so hit me with your best shot. And if I don't answer, yeah.
Why do we need to worry about quantum resistance if we're not even sure if the systems work yet? Like we're gonna iterate multiple times.
Plasma cache is real.
Is it because it's gonna exist in perpetuity for a long period of time and then future quantum computers?
I mean that generally we need to be like looking ahead and like protecting against. So to rephrase, if we can have a quantum resistance scheme in 1 year, I believe it's much better than investing six months in a non-quantum resistance scheme.
So I'll just chime in for a second. So I think the danger is if we encrypt all this data and we have like our browser history encrypted, and then somebody gets a quantum computer, we're all screwed, right?
More Q&A.
Okay, so how do you get started? Firstly, Kelvin and friends have done like a great, great, amazing educational effort with a site called lelplasma.org, if I'm not mistaken. But I am of the opinion that, where's the timer going if I don't have slides? But I am of the opinion that I literally cannot show you how one thing works if I literally point you like to. If I give you 10 links, it doesn't work that way. So I've been writing a plasma paper. Like, okay, I will talk about my work, right? I've been writing a sort of plasma paper that it's like a 20 pager that you read in maybe 2 hours, and you can like understand everything about plasma. This variant that I'm working on. So you read it, and basically you should be having like a pretty good idea of what's going on. And implementing a plasma contract isn't actually the hard thing. Implementing the client software is the hardest thing. Because the smart contract, you need like you define it, like you give it, like you need to do this for exit, this to withdraw, this to deposit. That's all there is to it. And you add the submit block function to commit the Merkle root, and that's it. But the client software, it needs to watch, it needs to cache state, because if you pull the Merkle proof, you need to save it. Because if you don't, like, and you restart your client and you don't have the proofs, you assume that the whatever entity is providing you the data, they will provide you the data. And if you do that, why even bother with Plasma? Which is, I'm pretty sure there are some like Plasma variants that assume some sort of data availability, and you shouldn't ever assume any kind of it. So yeah, just read, learn Plasma, and like, I'll give a link to the paper at the end. Yeah. Anything going on?
More questions?
Yeah,
questions.
Just anything, seriously. Yeah, Felix.
What's the state of MVP, and are there, like, can we use MVP today? Is there like an open source?
So I do not work on MVP, but again, my opinion. I do not think light client verification works on MVP. I'll put very contrarian opinion, so always with a grain of salt. So MVP, it requires you to validate the sidechain state, which by definition, it contradicts the scalability, because if you need to do full client validation on the light clients, you can never run like a secure plasma chain on your phone. You can never like validate the secure plasma chain on your phone. And you need to do that because otherwise you cannot be sure that the plasma chain is not a fractional reserve, like if there is withdrawals from it and you didn't take note. So yeah, that's why like I'm very bullish on the plasma cache, because everything that happens on chain, you know at that moment. So, okay, plasma cache, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so why is plasma? You have the main chain, the side chain, like you deposit some funds, you do the funds whatever you like. We talked about this already, so I will skip this through. The big detail that we need to like insist on is that each block must be submitted, and the gas cost for this, they kind of stack up. I actually really like this purple color. It's very satisfying. So you checkpoint each block, and the moment you consider transaction finalized, this is like a security property, that you consider transaction finalized, once the block root has been committed, and the witness data, the Merkle branch for that transaction that you're looking for, is made available to you. Because if that data is not made available to you, you literally cannot know if the transaction was included or it was censored. So just a moment to just say that Plasma Cache is real. It's working right now. It's live right now. You can do npm install like this thing. You can run this command. These are two real addresses, and you can connect to Rinkeby via Infura or your own node, but nobody runs their own nodes, unfortunately, but yeah. Shout out Bitcoin. And this is like how the thing looks from the inside. You type help, you have a bunch of commands. The user needs to do the very, very minimal amount of things. You just need deposit, transfer, exit, withdraw. That's all you need to do. I'm of the opinion that you never should like force the user to do anything regarding watching. It's all in the client software. And yeah, whatever. Like, you can demo it if you want. Like, I won't do a live demo because it's total, like, hubris. It doesn't work. So, okay, I've written this thing. Like, you should try to read it, give me feedback, and so on. I'm basically trying to do what I said before. I'm trying to do a very, like, concise overview of how Plasma Cache works and what's it about. And soon I will have, like, some more, like, formal notation of how the exit game and the finalizes and the state transitions work. So, first of all, like, why? It's real. We can do it, like, in pretty realistic time frames. I believe that I started working on it on May, and we had, like, an implementation within a month and a half. So it's real. We have low data requirements for the light clients. Like, okay, it's not really low, but it's lower than any other available solution. So I will claim it's low. And you can have, like, this modular architecture where if anything that you don't like, you just add the plugin. So this whole naming convention thing, yeah, I'll talk about it also. So I believe that this is a very good quality slide, like, to, like, get people to understand, like, what are the differences of each variant. So the ones that we are working on, and much thanks to Ranji for, maybe I said the name wrong, for all the discussion for this, is that whenever you deposit the coin on these variants of Plasma Cache, each coin is unique. So you have this, like, this gives you, like, a very simple exit game, and it's very, like, the security is tight. And what you can do is that, but it has some problems. It doesn't have, like, fungible payments, and the history grows like hell. So what you can do is that you can either, like, use some magic, like RSA accumulator zero knowledge proofs to prove the coin's history in a more compact way. And the other thing is that we need to, like, if you want to do, like, fungible payments with multiple ones, you can apply the other technique that you break a coin down in 100 pieces, and you have the user transferring the sub-pieces of it, and whenever you're speaking about a coin, you're actually talking about a range of coins. Or just use state channels, yeah. I'm a very big fan of state channels on Plasma, but we'll talk about that later. So the other variants, there are the Plasma MVP ones, which I argued earlier that they require too much data, and they also require they also require a sort of priority queue construction for exits, because if the operator is basically able to create a huge UTXO which exits the whole chain, which would make it a fractional reserve, and you need a mass exit, which to my knowledge there is no working mass exit scheme to date. And on top of it, you can add the more viable Plasma, which Kelvin has thought of, to, like, solve to make UX better, and maybe most viable Plasma one day, I don't know. And yeah, you can use NARCs to verify the state transitions from, like, one thing to another. So currently what we have is that we do transaction routes. So anytime you submit a block, you don't actually submit the state route, so it's not the latest state. So you need to, like, go literally through the whole block history. Well, in this case, you just have the state route, and it's, like, it's there. You know it's there because you have this whatever black magic box that it proves your assumptions. So I'm pretty sure this is a good taxonomy on, like, which are the variants of Plasma. And there are, okay, to be fair, these are the variants that are based on payments. the variants that are based on smart contracts, I'm not well informed on them. But they're very fun. So to do, like, a quick technology primer, so the main data structure that we use in Plasma Cache, it's a sparse Merkle tree. It's basically a tree which has all the, it has, like, whatever leaf amount you want. It's all pre-computed, so it's all, like, in the default values. It's the hash of zero or whatever null value you want. And to prove the inclusion of an element, you do it in the classic way that you just provide the Merkle branch with the siblings and everything. I'm assuming that people know how a Merkle tree works. And the fun part is that you can actually prove non-inclusion by giving a proof of inclusion of the zero hash, of the hash of zero at this leaf. And this is very convenient because we can. This is what basically makes Plasma Cache work. And you can actually have some very nice optimizations on top of this. So because all the values are pre-computed, when I'm giving the Merkle proof, I do not need to give, like, 32 bytes every time. Whenever I want to give the default value for a sibling, I can just give a bit field. And this, like, it's literally one bit versus 32 bytes. And in this very simple example, so, like, instead, normally the Merkle path could have been hash of zero and the higher level one, so it's 64 bytes. Well, with the optimization for the bitmap, it's 2 bits. And much love to the Walk team for thinking this up and having a working implementation. So, the usual suspects. Alice deposit 5 Ether was, like, the actual flow, so. Pardon me. So Alice deposits, like, 5 Ether to the smart contract. the smart contract emits some deposit event that the plasma chain listens. The plasma chain is supposed to create a new block, one new block per deposit. This is not a security requirement, but it makes proving, like, it's an optimization, basically. This has been asked a number of times. You just deposit the coin and you get a new block. This isn't necessary, but it's better. And what it does is it creates a plasma block, and you get literally a 5 Ether bill, if you will. And the thing is that the transaction flow, it's like UTXO-based, but it's one input, one output. I cannot break a coin. I just say new owner, and that's a new owner, just like cash, yeah. So I'll just go through a simple like example of how the deposit, the transaction flow works. So deposit, Alice deposits the 5 Ether. I like the 5 Ether example. So 5 Ether, like, it just appears. Alice gives the coin to Bob. But the thing is that at this moment, Bob must actually verify that the coin's history is valid. And now let's consider that there is a new block where Alice does, where Bob, who is the latest valid owner of the coin, doesn't move the coin. And if Bob wants to give the coin to Charlie, Charlie must not only verify the inclusion in block 1 and 2, he must also verify the non-inclusion in block 3, which is why I spoke before about the non-inclusion proofs in sparse Merkle trees. And he needs to do that because, considering the fact that there might have been a transfer from 2 to 3, the 2 to 3 would make the 2 to 4 a double spend, and we don't want double spends. So, yeah, and he does that, and he exits by providing an ancestor. There has been some discussion lately that there might be a way to optimize this to not require an ancestor, but I'm not sure about the safety of it. If you want to evaluate it, fine. But I haven't been able to evaluate it. But basically, the thing that we know that works currently is you give it a coin and the parent coin, and you use this to exit. And I will go over the exit game, the game that's played, like, very soon. So the whole plasma constructions, they work based on a challenge period, like the classic dispute period, where I make a claim, I put up a bond, I wait some amount of time, and if nobody challenges, yeah, my claim must probably be right. Right? It's all like crypto economics. I hate that word. So the time currently and the bond amounts are totally arbitrary. I'm of the opinion that somebody just wrote the first MVP implementation. Maybe it was David, actually. Like, it just put, like, 7 days for an exit period, and everybody said, that's it, the Holy Grail. Or maybe Vitalik say, I don't know. But the point is that currently there has been no game theoretic, like, proper analysis on, like, what the deposit, what the challenge period should be and what the bond amount should be. And I'm very interested in that. So if you have any research on that, please speak to me. And yeah, so this is, like, a good takeaway from the presentation, that we model each coin as its own state machine. So state machines, like, it's, yeah, we have the initial deposited state, and basically you define a transition function that whenever you want to go from one state to another, some certain things need to happen. And what you do, it's simply like whenever you want to go from deposited to exiting, you start an exit and you put up a bond. The start exit, you put whatever proofs you like, it doesn't matter. And there are two types of challenges. The one type of challenge is the interactive one, and the other is the non-interactive. So I'll speak about the non-interactive, which is simpler. So the non-interactive challenge, it is essentially I see a claim and I instantly challenge it and the exit goes home, like it never happened, right? And it's a simple form of challenges. However, the interactive challenges, essentially, in order to finalize an exit, it mustn't have any pending challenges, any outstanding challenges. So what you do is I start an exit, somebody else challenges my exit, and in order for me to be able to finalize my exit, the word exit has been said too many times, you need to actually respond to the exit. And, like, you have, let's say you have a counter, a challenge counter that goes up and down, and the only way to finalize it is when it's at zero. I hope this slide is clear because it's, like, more or less the whole, like, construction of how it works. And now I'll talk about the challenges. So I'm hoping things are clear so far because, like, this is where we're getting to the examples. Let's say that Alice has a coin at block N, whatever you like, and Alice spends the coins, she gives it to Bob or whoever else, and Bob maybe then gives it to Charlie. So the thing is that Alice isn't forced to exit from the latest state. She can always go to a stale state and just say, I'll exit. So yeah, she can do that, but the thing is that she needs to wait 7 days or whatever to do the exit. And at that point, another entity, they can challenge by providing a spend. So Alice essentially makes the claim, I'm the latest owner of the coin, and then the challenger comes and says, no, you're not. Basically, that's the whole thing that you need to know about it. And this is the one type of attack that you can do. And this shout out to Carl because he did, like, a very good, like, specification which explained all that stuff. I used it, you should use it. The other alternative is that you do a double spend. So the example I was talking about before, I was considering the fact that the Charlie, or Alice Prime, not Plasma Prime, is actually like it's not a colluding party. So what can happen in this case is that Alice gives the coin to Bob, and Alice, in collusion with the operator, they double spend the coin. So they give it themselves, some other friend of them, whatever. And what happens in this case, if Charlie wants to exit the coin, he needs to provide the parent, as I said. And the whole like exit game here, it works that you need to provide the coin that is in between. And this actually proves the double spend, because you say, no, I owned it before you did. And yeah. And the final example of like the exit game is that when you're exiting a coin, you actually, so when you're receiving a coin, you actually validate the whole coin's history. But what if you don't? So I want to stress that in this example, like, try to imagine that the red arrow doesn't exist. It exists, but it's like the response state. So let's say that Alice has a coin, and that the operator, they collude with some party to give a coin to Bob. So they make an invalid state transition. So to say, in Plasma MVP, if an invalid state transition happens, the whole chain has to leave, which isn't possible, seriously. So what you do is that if somehow Alice, somehow there's a transaction that gives the coin to Bob, and Bob starts transacting with this coin, there's an invalid state. And if Bob, Charlie, Dylan aren't malicious parties, they will check the coin's history, but they're trying to steal the coin. So Dylan tries to exit, and at this point, at the 7-day period, Alice can say, no, I am the latest of the owner of the coin. In this example, what you can do is that you can actually respond to the exit. So this is the interactive challenge. The previous two, they were non-interactive. In this one, when you make an exit, when you make a challenge, you leave also some amount of time to respond. Because if Alice made an invalid exit, an invalid challenge, somebody should be able to respond. So that's there where the red arrow comes in. That you should be able to bridge, essentially. You should prove that there is actually a spend from Alice to Bob, and it validates her, challenge. And there can be a number of these. So you can have like multiple challenges with invalid histories. And the final result is that you want it to be, you can only finalize the exit when it has zero challenges. So from my experience, like towards building a client, like it has been a pain to actually like keep, like on the implementation part, it has been a pain to like actually keep the Plasma contract and the Plasma chain in sync, because you have essentially a cron job which submits block to the main chain and to the Ethereum, whatever you want to call it. And the thing is that you have to make, essentially, you mustn't make any synchrony assumptions. At any time, like any state that is in the chain, it must be checkpointed. But if there is a delay, or if for some reason the cron job submits a block twice, your chains are out of sync. So the main chain contract gets at block 10, and the Plasma chain is at block 9. So that's bad. And that also relates to the second bullet point, that whenever you're listening, so the Plasma chain actually listens for mainnet events to actually like modify the state. And you need to apply them in the right order, because if you don't, the state will be botched, and so it's a problem. On the client side, so this was on the operator side, let's say, to have a correct, honest operator software. On the client side, you need to also, like, whenever you go offline, you need to save the block that you went offline, and when you go back online, you need to check everything that happened while you were offline. And it's like, it sounds like bad, but it's like actually what happened with full nodes, but I guess it's our approach towards full nodes, but with like very light clients. And yeah, I'm very much of the opinion that you need to keep the client light. If you need to store too much data on it, it's bad. But also you need to be able to like, yeah, just cache the state. So if you download some data, just keep it there and don't discard it. This may sound obvious, but yeah. So we should be able to do better. So currently this is like, better is the enemy of good. Good is good enough. Currently it is workable, it is done. But we want to do better. We want to reduce the two main problems that we want to solve is reducing the coin history and making fungible payments. And this is pretty much what the Plasma Prime transaction is. So I'll just give a brief overview of what happens. So the non-fungible coins, it's a double-edged sword because it gives you this nice security properties, but you have like you cannot make the payments that you like. So the one approach is that you have a change provider. So I send Jeff like 7 Ether and gives 2 back to me. But you need an atomic swap transaction, which before Plasma Prime, the dream, it didn't exist. And the other approach, it was the Plasma Debit by Dan, who I love Dan, but he's not here. Yeah, Plasma Debit, which basically, like instead of a coin like having a certain value, it can have any value between 0 and that value, and you can think of it as a liquid, like a liquid that goes from 0 to that to its max capacity, And essentially, if you're able to reduce the one like liquid by a certain amount and increase the other one by another amount, essentially you have simulated a transfer from these two. And it's very neat because it also has the notion of transferable payment channels. Because if I have a coin, if I own a coin that is like with some balance and I transfer it to somebody else, it's essentially that guy who has now, or girl who has the payment channel now. So it's very, very convenient. And the final approach, which is the cash flow defragmentation prime, whatever, is that I deposit like one Ether, and instead of depositing one Ether, I get 100 0.01 Ether coins. And I can move them around and so on. But the problem with that is that if I have, let's say, like 10 coins in a row, and I send the middle coin, suddenly I have two, like I have two subtrees. And the whole technique, the efficiencies of this technique, is that you can exit multiple coins by exiting a subtree, by proving it with whatever magic. And and the other approaches, like how will we reduce the history, right? So firstly, the checkpoints, TLDR, it's like you have a coin and you, instead of validating from its deposit, which is like 10 million blocks ago, you validate up to the last checkpoint, so you pick the checkpoint, the range to be like manageable. However, I claim that this requires too much social coordination because it involves the operator advertising. It's complicated. And the other approach is that you can like simply like make less frequent commitments, but this hits on your throughput and your capacity. Because if I have like, you basically say that if I have like 1 gigabyte of history and they commit one time every 15 seconds, it makes sense to say that if I commit one time every minute, the coin history goes down by one fourth, to the one fourth. The other approach to use the probabilistic structure, which is the Bloom filters, but if the Bloom filter has false positives, and it was shown recently that you can actually like pollute the Bloom filter, yeah. Another approach is the accumulator. So with the accumulators, what you do is that the goal with the accumulators is that you succinctly prove the inclusion or non-inclusion of something. And you use either RSA accumulator, which is the current like approach that people like, or there's another alternative, which is pairing-based, which I would like to discuss at the Plasma Call Live later. And the final thing is that, yeah, that magic black box, the SNARK-STARK toolkit, which I was at the STARK presentation yesterday, and I was informed that it is possible to actually do batch proofs and everything we need, like with STARKs, in a realistic time frame. So that will be like lovely if we can have it. And there is this other thing. So currently, the UX sucks. You need to wait 7 days to exit the coin, if you need to exit the coin. My opinion is that you don't need to exit the coin, but it must be there. So what you can do is that you can literally like tokenize the exit. So I make an exit, instead of like owning the exit, I can get an ERC-721 or whatever non-fungible, and I can sell that around, and whoever owns that coin, it's like a coupon, and you can send it, and you can, after the exit period has passed, you can withdraw it. And the whole construction is that this creates a whole market for exits, where instead of like pay, if I'm exiting 5 ETH, essentially somebody else is probably willing to buy my coin for 4.95 ETH because they have a lower term preference. And this party, it makes sense to say that it will be the operator because they're running the chain and they don't care. And they also run a full node anyway, so they know what's valid and not. And the second one is the optimistic exit. So when exiting, you need to provide Merkle proof signatures, whole lot of stuff. It's a lot of data, so that the gas can go from 100,000 to like 200,000 and maybe more, depending on your proof size. Alternatively, what you can do is that you can assume that the exit will be valid and add one more challenge, the crypto-economic approach, which is, it's nice because like you can essentially reduce the cost of an exit like 60K gas, like for two store operations, but you add another challenge and yeah. So the final takeaway from this presentation, the technical stuff, it's solid, like you should look into it, it's not complicated, and talk to me for learning about it. Plasma doesn't improve finality, so this whole 1 million transactions per second dream, it's not real. What you do is that you increase the capacity that you can force per 15 seconds. Because currently if Ethereum can handle like, what is it, like 9 million gas per block or 8, what you do is that you can put the whole information that happened on the Plasma chain in 32 bytes. And storing 32 bytes is cheap. So if we had like multiple Plasma chains, yeah, okay, the scalability it can be 1 million transactions per second, but it still settles every 15 seconds if the data is made available. And yeah, essentially just think of it as a compression. literally. Maybe not because you assume a decompression mechanism, but the thing is that you just take everything, you put very little data on it, and if you follow some certain rules of the protocol, like watching, you're good. And yeah, it's a non-custodial sidechain. Thank you very much. And these are the repositories. Go check them, break it if you can. Yeah. Yeah, and happy to take any questions. Maybe, is there a microphone?
Thank you for your talk. What's the problem with allowing atomic, multiple transactions to be atomic within one Plasma block?
Because you cannot force the operator to include both. So what you can do is that you can construct a game where one transaction is depend, what you want in atomic swaps is that, atomic is a bad word actually, so like either both happen or none happen. Right, so this matches your exchange use case, I guess. So the operator, you need to force them, if they include one transaction, that either they must include the other one, or if they include the one and they don't include the other one, that one is invalid. Right, and you can do this by essentially like doing a two-step game. We're just like similar in the classic atomic swap construction between chains. You just, you commit to a pre-image and you give the pre-image to each other and you reveal. But yeah. Maybe Carl is better to ask like in depth on how the atomic swap works, because I haven't been looking the prime how they, how it's been done.
One more question. Okay, quick, if it's quick.
Okay. So I'm from Doc, we are a data exchange protocol, and we were trying to enable micropayments using Plasma Cash, and we did a POC. So we came up with that approach, but I want to know your thoughts. How do you think micropayments can be enabled using
Plasma? Why don't you want to use the payment channels, is my question. You have the engineering toolkit, and you need to use the right tool. I do not believe that Plasma is the right tool.
Okay, Plasma Cash, you know.
It doesn't matter. It's
not, okay, yeah, so yeah. You're saying using the state channels probably is a better way?
Payment channels. Yes.
Okay. I think Georgios needs a lot more credit for actually implementing Plasma Cash, which is pretty amazing. So thank you, Georgios.